You're listening to the KHSU Magazine. I'm David Reed. I'm here in place of Lorna Bryant, who's off at doing some exciting things in the community. And also here in KHSU's Studio A is Nick Lamb from the Schatz Energy Research Center. Nick, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks
for having
me.
You're speaking tonight as part of the Sustainable Futures Speakers Series.
I am.
Up at Founders Hall on Humboldt State Campus. Before we get to the talk, for people who are unfamiliar, what does the Schatz Center do?
Yeah, so the Schatz Center, it's a research center here on the Humboldt State campus. I guess you could say we broadly work on establishing clean energy technologies, both here in the U.S. and actually internationally. And I specifically actually work on the international side in their energy access team.
So you recently joined the Schatz Center, but you've been doing this work as a research scientist for a while. What's your field of interest?
Yeah, I joined about 3 months ago. My background is in air pollution, actually. And so I've spent a lot of years traveling to other countries, measuring air quality and exposure to air pollution, measuring health effects of being exposed to air pollution, and sort of testing sort of the impact of various technologies and solutions for improving energy, the way people meet their energy needs, and in general. Yeah.
Okay. So in relating to tonight's talk as part of the Sustainable Futures series, what are people going to hear? What is going to be interesting to the layperson coming to this talk tonight?
Yeah. I think of a few things. One is that until I got into this area, I wasn't really aware that, you know, billions of people around the world don't have access to what are typically often called modern fuels, so electricity, liquid like petroleum gas, things that we have in our homes. Most of us have in our homes in Humboldt County, and in the absence of those things, people rely on technologies and fuels in ways that emit a lot of air pollution, and that air pollution affects the quality of air in the home. People are exposed to it. So just meeting their daily cooking, heating, lighting needs, they're being exposed to harmful levels of air pollution. And that air pollution then travels out into the environment, contributes to outdoor air pollution, so affects communities, and then continues and interacts in the atmosphere, sort of exacerbating climate change in some cases.
What kind of fuels are we talking about?
Yeah, so some of the really typical ones, in the broad term is called solid fuel, which tends to be things like wood, coal, charcoal, things like that. And they're typically burned in essentially, if you can imagine like a campfire, except it's in your kitchen. Okay. So imagine lighting a campfire in your kitchen without any kind of ventilation or hood, and then doing that multiple times a day with your kids. And then for lighting, it's often kerosene lamps, but not the ones that we're familiar with sometimes with the glass shrouds, but literally just cans with wicks that are kind of like a candle, and they just spew black soot like the stuff you see out of a diesel truck.
I was going to ask you, because I was in researching for the interview today, I was seeing black carbon a lot. What is black carbon and why should I care about
it? Yeah, so black carbon is interesting. So black carbon has it has both health and climate relevance. Essentially, if you can imagine, like looking at a campfire, for example, a lot of that smoke that comes off looks pretty white. Mm-hmm. And so particles, you can sort of think of particles as sort of having a black and sort of a white component. And imagine sort of holding a black thing up in the air. It sort of blocks out a lot. It absorbs a lot, like wearing black clothing, for example. And particles, black carbon is sort of that, but in particle form. And so from a climate perspective, it's what's called a short-lived climate forcer, which means it has a very short lifetime in the atmosphere. And so when we emit it, it's gone within a few days. So it's really appealing for sort of near-term climate benefit. If we can get rid of those, we'll see a benefit sooner. And the other reason it's important is it actually, when you inhale it, if I were to inhale it, for example, like diesel soot, it has health impacts as well.
Right. So a lot of your work sounds like it deals with measuring exposure and also just the impacts of energy to individuals. What has that been like? What has kind of the research that you've done?
Yeah. So I've done a variety of, I've worked a little bit with just sort of measuring the sources of pollution. So things like stoves and kerosene lamps and engines and things like that. And also actually measuring what people are exposed to. So putting sensors on people as they move through their day-to-day lives and looking at how they interact with those pollutant sources.
Okay. So you're actually doing studies where there are sensors not just in a room, but actually on a human.
Yeah, that's right. And the reason we do that is because, you know, like you and I, we're very dynamic. We move around, we go outside, we go inside, and we're interacting with all kinds of different potential sources of air pollution. And so when we do an intervention that tries to change out something in a home, we really want to know what the question is in light of all of the things that we're exposed to in our day-to-day lives, is this one thing actually having a benefit in terms of our potential exposure to air pollution or health?
What would some of those experiments and those measurement studies look like? I mean, what's a concrete example?
Yeah, so we recently just finished a study in Kenya in an area of homes, rural homes that were unelectrified that rely on kerosene lamps for their primary lighting source. And what we did is we put sensors on air pollution monitors, more specifically on parents and also on teenage kids.
Okay.
And we measured them when they had their kerosene lamps. We don't stay there. We leave. We sort of set them up, and then they just sort of walk around and do their thing. And then we give them solar lamps. And we measure to see what happens. So do they use those lamps? And then if they do, what happens to their exposure? And so one of the really interesting things that we got from that study was that we actually saw considerable reductions, sometimes as high as 80% reductions in particle exposures, which is on a level that would be consistent or suggestive of health benefit. And especially in the kids, the reduction was extremely high because the kerosene lamps were their main source of exposure. They just, because a lot of the other things that generate smoke, they weren't interacting with.
So does that work suggest mitigations, different solutions?
Yeah.
And I mean, are things actually happening as a result of that research?
So it adds a lot of evidence to help us. It's extremely encouraging because in general, there are a lot of constraints that keep us from realizing the full potential of a lot of these energy access programs. And one of them is, do people adopt it? Do people like it? You know, like just like you and I, like if someone were to give us something that didn't meet our needs or we didn't like, we're not going to use it just because it's there necessarily.
Just because it may have some benefit to the greater good or...
Exactly, yeah. And so they have to sort of, we can't, it has to sort of fit into their value system. And in this case, the lamps, from what we could tell, were extremely valued by them. They used them. The kerosene lamps completely stopped being used within days of getting these solar lamps. And so it's encouraging that we have sort of a solution. It's not going to fix, you know, global health or all of the health impacts from air pollution in developing countries, but it is one tool within our toolkit that we can use that not only has health benefit, but also has a lot of benefits in terms of service. You know, like you can actually stay up later now. Mm. You don't spend as much money on fuel. Just the quality of light is just a lot better. And so there are a lot of other sort of social benefits that I personally am very interested in, but that's not my specialty, that are also there.
Well, I was going to ask because, you know, is this work more about improving individuals' lives, or is it more about improving the health of of the environment, of the world?
Yeah.
And since, you know, the U.S. and industrial nations use so much more energy and so much more pollutants, is this a good use of our resources? But it sounds like it's making a big difference in individuals' lives.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I think that, I guess one way to say it is in a lot of countries, actually, so the pollution that's generated in these countries doesn't stay in these countries. You know, like gases that are generated there, particles that are generated, they'll get transferred over here. So in some ways we are in some ways affected, not a massive amount. Certainly the impact in those countries is much bigger. I think that to me the motivation behind doing it is, are any of these solutions really going to solve our climate problem? No. Is any single one going to solve health issue, all of health issues? No. But there are a lot of what are often called co-benefits, so multiple benefits. So even though you don't, you know, when you add up all of those individual things, the health, the climate, the economic, all of a sudden you sort of, to me, you have something that's very appealing, both for sort of serving a broader population, but also really impacting at a personal level as well, immediately.
It's, I mean, it sounds like just reading the study on the kerosene lamps, and I haven't even looked at the solid fuels for cooking, that it really does make individual impact almost immediately.
Yeah, it does. It to me, from what I've seen, it does. And that's actually funny. That's actually why I started working on it, because I was working on cook stoves, and I was in a village in Uganda, and a household was asking me, why are you doing these measurements? And I said, it's because, you know, it emits particles and people inhale them. It hurts, you know, it can damage health and also the environment. And they were actually the ones that brought the lamp out. And they said, you should measure this thing then.
They brought the kerosene lamp.
Yeah, they brought it out. And my colleague was sitting, he's from Uganda. And he said, have you ever seen one of these? And I said, no, I've never seen one of these. And we said, yeah, well, if, you know, obviously this was important enough for a house to bring us. So we said, let's test it. And it broke our instrument within 2 minutes.
Oh my gosh.
And it was just overloaded all of our instruments. And at that point, I just thought, well, geez, like, this is something that obviously matters to people. And if it breaks our instrument in 2 minutes, it probably matters for other people too.
And those kerosene lamps are pretty ubiquitous in Africa and parts of Asia. I mean,
there are quite a few of them, and a lot of the work at Schatz has done an amazing job building the market for alternatives. And so I would actually say that lighting is one of the areas where they're probably making some of the best progress in terms of replacing kerosene.
Wow.
And so that's really encouraging for me as a researcher.
Well, we're running out of time. Where can people see you tonight as part of Sustainable Future Series? Do you know?
Yeah, I think I know. I don't remember the room number. 5:30, Founders Hall.
Room 113.
Yeah.
Room 113. It's about an hour and a half talk, or?
Yeah, it's about a little over an hour talk, and then there's going to be, I think, some Q&A.
Great. And any charge for this?
No, it's totally free.
Just show up. Find a parking spot and show up. Nick Lamb from Schatz Energy Research Center, thank you so much for being with KHSU today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, this is great. Anything you wanted to tell people before we go?
No, come and visit us at Schatz if you don't know what we do.
It's a beautiful building.
It is, actually.
It's a neat place. Thanks a lot.